Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, a podcast for the modern age. Introducing your hosts, Justin Corey at Wizard of Whiskey, Nicole Woolsey and Violet Smith. When the lights go down, the bullshit shows up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Swig and Ramble podcast. Thank you for joining us for this special holiday Easter episode with Susan Lynn, a real-life rock star, master of wine, and all-around good egg.
Welcome, Susan.
Hello, Justin, and hello to everybody who is here. It's wonderful to be here. It's an honor to be able to talk about my favorite subject in the world. Wine and music, and wine and music together. And what better than for any time of the year, but especially during the holidays, when you feel like things might be a little bit stressful, or there's a lot happening, or you're just feeling reflective or feeling celebratory. There is so much that wine can bring to the table and music, and what better than to bring those two together?
Fantastic. With me here, as always, is Nicole and Violet. Violet, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty lovely. We are out in San Diego, and being a landlocked state now, this is pretty awesome. We got to go to the beach yesterday and spend some time in the water. That was great. And so I'll just jump into what I've got in my glass. I've got a lovely Blanc de Noir. Sorry, I'm learning all of these recently from Breathless. And I'll jump into the mash too. Although there's nothing much to be souring my mash here in San Diego, we do have a cold shower that won't heat up. But if that's all I've got, I think I'm doing pretty okay this week.
Cold shower when you want one is great, but cold shower when you don't want one is not great.
Right, like the first night, or I guess the day after getting off an airplane and everything, I kind of wanted a warm shower. We got two more. I mean, you can't complain too much. Two more bathtubs, but it was a surprise. But Justin, what about you? How are we doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Doing great. In fact, I just got out of a nice warm shower, so really enjoying that. In my glass, I also have the Breathless Blanc de Noir, which we will get to in some detail a little bit later. But it is. It's a great wine, and so I'm excited about this. We're going to talk with Susan about sparkling wine and music here in a few minutes. But what sours my mash, honestly, is when you are driving along on a freeway, and freeways are generally meant for long distances. If you have a trailer or something on the back of your car, you should never, ever, ever be in the left lane if you are. It's a two-lane highway. If it's a three-lane highway, you still shouldn't be in the two left lanes. If you need to move over really quickly to merge, fine. Move your ass back. Don't sit there for 13 minutes dawdling and hanging out and yelling at the kids. And this goes out, honestly, mostly to semi-truck drivers. I get you have to pass somebody. In the state of California, you are only allowed to pass one at a time. You cannot pass a row of FedEx trucks. I know it's annoying, but get your ass back to your lane. With love, America. Nicole, how are you?
Oh, I'm just great, Justin. Just happy to be here. I don't really have any sour my mash thing because I'm on a vacation in San Diego and it's beautiful out here, except for the ants.
Oh yeah,
California.
Yeah. I woke up this morning and I was punching my makeup bag on my counter in the bathroom. So that was fun. But you know, it's fine.
Like I said, it's so hard to have a soured mash when you're on vacation.
The little inconveniences, it's fine. I'm also drinking the Breathless Blanc de Noir. It's pretty good. Yeah.
And finally, tell us, Susan, what is in your glass and what sours your mash?
That is such a fun concept. Actually, right now, because it is 11 in the morning, I do have a genmai cha tea, a hot tea, in my mug. But yesterday, at this event, I was able to try a sparkling wine from Bosnia Herzegovina, and
Excellent.
that was really, really interesting. I hadn't really had a sparkling that tasted quite like that before. So it was light, but it didn't, it was on the fruitier side. It definitely had some lees contact on it, but it didn't have that sort of mouthfeel or the sort of leesy creaminess that you would probably expect to get on a traditional method sparkling wine. And it was just interesting. It was like really it almost had like a slightly cidery, apple mash taste to it,
Nice.
which was, yeah, so that kind of is in line with what we're talking about here. So that was really interesting. But what sours my mash? Well, Justin, I have to say, since we're all in California and the amount of driving that we do, you really articulated that well. So thank you so much for that. But I'll say something that's a little bit more specific to the music world, perhaps, is that when you go to, like, for example, if you go to somebody's house and they're very well to do, they might be somebody who really appreciates wine, they have a lovely house, and then you see they have this amazing piano, and it's never played, and that for me is like a fate worse than death for a fine instrument. It's so sad. And you can kind of get the energy when you go up to it. It's hard to explain, but if you go up to a piano, you can kind of feel whether it's been played or
I
not.
believe there's a piano here,
100%.
and it's not a grand piano or anything fancy, but there's a piano in the next room, and I don't think she's been played in a while.
Yeah, and you know what happens. I get it, but it just makes me, I'm not sure. I don't think it really, I don't know if it sours my mash. It just makes me sad, and I really want to,
Maybe I'll bust out some chopsticks on there
There
before
you
we
go.
leave. Yeah,
As
because
long as
music is
you play it with
energy.
good energy.
Yeah, it's the energy. Like you can feel the energy when somebody loves something and puts it into it, it stays. Like you can
Exactly.
just feel it.
So that's the one I'll share for
Okay.
today.
That's a good
May
one.
all
I like
great
that
pianos
one.
be loved.
Yes, I agree.
So no, that's a good point. It does. I in a similar vein, I had a customer years ago at in Chicago. I was working for a retailer, and he was one of those who would just come in, "Hey man, here's my credit card. I need this many bottles for a party. Throw some tequila and some whiskey on there, and just charge the card, whatever." He invites me over one time to open some older wines. We pop open an 88 Sauternes, and then in this corner of his cellar, who's very well to do. In the corner of a cellar, there's just a ton of Chateauneuf du Pape sitting there, and I'm like, "Why is it all? What's wrong?" And he's like, "I invested in it. I bought a shit ton. From the '90s all the way through I think the current releases were like 2001. So this was many, many years ago. So we had stuff from the '70s, the '80s, and the '90s, and all the way up to 2001, and just a ton of it sitting there in the corner. And I'm like, "What's going on with that? Why isn't that in the rest of your?" He's like, "Well, I got to get rid of it." It's like, "Why?" He's like, "I bought it all, and then I opened the bottle, and I don't like it." I'm like, "You fucking serious? You have that kind of throwaway money, bro?" And he was only asking for like 7 grand, which was like $38,000 less than what he could have asked. And I would have done it had my girlfriend at the time not. Would have killed me, but this was 20 some odd years ago. So had I just bought it for 7 grand, I could have, sold it for probably 600K at this point. It was just a ton of wine sitting there. But to your point, things are meant to be enjoyed. I consider myself a collector in that regard when it comes to books and obviously bottles, but I'm also not one of those where I'm going to keep the bottle forever. It's not going to get sold. It's going to get consumed. So anyway,
Amen.
yeah. So tell us a little bit who you are, why you're here today, and what the hell is it you do? Because I was reading this thesis paper, and I have to say it is very impressive that you can go on for this long about wine and music. And I will say
Little bit.
I thoroughly enjoy this section here in section three, about musical composition having a particular set of parameters and having an emotional impact. And I've often said, from the culinary side of the world, it's easy to say food is emotional. The smells, the, you know, someone's cooking you a meal because you feel bad. You soup every exactly. Yeah. It is very easy to talk about food and its relationship to emotion. Music, to me, has that same emotional draw, as does wine. So tell us, tell us.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Justin, for this invitation and for being interested in this topic, because this is why we're all doing this, right? You know, we're in wine and because we want to be able to have great experiences, have interesting experiences, and to impart those experiences with other people. It's about sharing those experiences and having people discover their own. And music is very much that way as well. Like, you know, in terms of, you know, performing art, when, you know, you get out there and you play music, it's about wanting to share, you know, what it is that you're feeling and be able to, and hoping that through, you know, all the hard work that you've done and being able to have the skill and then the aptitude and then the, you know, the emotional wherewithal to be able to share what you want to share, that something comes across to people. And I feel like, you know, that and wine have so many synergies in that way. So who am I? Yeah, again, my name is Susan Lin. I have been doing music my entire life. Piano is my main instrument, although I play brass instruments as well. I've played in jazz ensembles, marching bands, what have you. Wine was something that really came to me as a gift from my maternal grandfather, having showed me from a very young age what hospitality means. He would always have a wonderful bottle or two of whether it was wine or cognac at dinners at his house. When my grandparents still lived in the United States, when I was very, very little, they would have the kids eat first, and then they would be like, all right, kids, go away, time for the adults, you know. And then I was like, I don't want to go to the living room and play. I want to see what's happening, because that's when the bottles came out. Yeah. That was when the bottles came out, and something happened that was really, really cool. And I wanted to be there to see that. And my grandfather was always just such a loving person. Like, he really, really wanted to bring a convivial atmosphere to the table. And he was the one who showed me what magic, you know, a good beverage can bring with great hospitality and generosity and that experience. So that has always stayed with me. So, you know, later when I started, you know, playing music, like, you know, if they have like bars and restaurants, hotels, whatever, I would see that sort of ritual playing out over again, right? You know, people would bring the bottle of wine. There would be this kind of, you know, ritual that would happen, and you would see people bond over that, whether it's for business or whether it was personal or, you know, or both. It's something that's extremely powerful, and that's always stayed with me. And so I never thought that I would actually ever have a career in wine, because I ended up going to high tech first. And then eventually, like, I was like, I really wanted to have my dream of having a degree in music. So I finally went and got my master's in piano and musicology. But then I was starting to study wine at the same time, because I was like, I really want to learn more about this. I've been studying on my own, but I need an academic framework to really guide my studies. And that's when I started going into the WSET and just really kind of going there. And once I started, I didn't really want to stop. So I just kept going. And the master of wine is a whole different level. But the best part about that is if you can actually make it through the first two stages, including like the 5-day, like, you know, exam, then you get to the dissertation. And that's when I knew that I had to pursue any effects of music on the sensory perception of wine in a very specific way, because there's just so much to think about in that, you know, I mean, these two very seemingly disparate sensory, you know, stimuli, but they have, like Justin, you put so well, I mean, there's something that's really, really emotional about it, right? So it's like, what happens when you bring those two together? And is there anything that can be, you know, derived from that in terms of data, or is it just something that's entirely like, you know, woo-woo, right? You know, somebody like people don't really care about it. It's like totally subjective. And as somebody who's worked at Google, which is all about data and data-driven results, you know, I'm skeptical too. But at the same time, I understand that wine and music have a magical power over you. You know, there's something that you really can't explain. And so, you know, bringing that together with the science, saying, is there anything that we can say and can gather trends from in a quantitative way? And it was incredible when I was doing the research to see whether it would make sense for me to do a research project like this, because you have to do your literature review, right? You need to see who else has done studies and what it's shown, if anything. And so I read so many studies, academic papers, and it actually seemed to be this trend called, it's sort of in a cognitive neuroscience tradition. It's called a cross-modal correspondences, where basically we tend to make intuitive associations between stimuli that are seemingly different, right? In this case, it would be something that tastes sense and then something auditory, right? Something that you're hearing. So it was actually shown that when people isolated different like sound pitches, like, you know, just maybe with MIDI or something like that with certain tastes, they would say like, okay, a high pitch was associated with sourness or acidity. And maybe a low pitch was evoked the sort of sense of you know, dark chocolate going into bitterness, you know, depending on how low it was. And so this was really fascinating to me. And we saw like, wow, there are these actual trends. And through the different research that I did, people have actually done some research on wine. And it was really, really interesting to see what kinds of correspondences there were. But I was really, really surprised that nobody had focused on sparkling wine. And when you have effervescence, when you have CO2, mm-hmm. it's something that's going to really change things. I was like, we need to figure this out. And you know what, selfishly, like, I absolutely love sparkling wine and I love champagne, and you know, classical music is my wheelhouse. So I'm like, you know, every study has to be really, really like limited in scope so that you can actually, you know, manage the data. Because if you have too much, you know, if your scope is too big, your data is not going to be worth anything. It's just going to be too nebulous. So it was really great that I was able to put those two things together, because I really wanted to. And then I was able to prove that there was something to be learned from this experiment, so I could get it approved for my dissertation for the Master of Wine. So that's how this paper got started. And awesome. Yeah, it was really, I was kind of like a one woman roadshow for like 2 months, where I conducted in-person experiments, each with a very, very sort of academically set experiment, with 9 to 11 participants each in a blind tasting and listening session.
Oh, wow.
So I had several of these sessions so that I would have over 71 participants and actually have a good set of data for that. And that's where I built the paper off of. But I had to tell myself, you know, there's a possibility that there would be no influence whatsoever, and the data would say, yep, zilch, nothing, whatever. And
you still learn something.
I would have to write that paper and be like, yeah, this refutes, you know, some of the studies that I've done before. You know, here are the similarities between the experiments, the differences. Here's what might be. But I was pretty shocked at some of the results that corroborated some of the past studies, and also learned some new things, because again, we were focusing on sparkling wine.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So
have you heard of the word frisson or musical chills?
Musical chills.
Yeah,
that sounds like it could be a thing. Yes.
So they also call it frisson, and I get it all the time when I listen to music, and it's that complete overall body chills. And like, it almost like it can make me cry, and I don't even mean to, but like, that's like, I feel like that's the deep emotion of music and how well it like connects to people in general. Not a lot of people get the musical chills or frisson, so it's kind of interesting when you do. You're like, oh, okay, that's
I'm
fun.
Really glad you do, because I totally do. It just happens. It's so
visceral. It's annoying sometimes when you're like sitting there like watching a TikTok of like somebody who's singing really beautifully, or and it just hits you just right where you get the chills, and then you're like, you kind of like well up a little, and it's like, wow, like it's so beautiful. I love the emotion in music, and I think the wine, that definitely, I could see like having a wine with it too. It's just like all mixes so well.
Yeah. And you know what, with the, it's, I'm so happy that you made my day because, you know, this is what we do, especially as like, you know, people who share wines or like, you know, share music. You really hope to touch somebody in a really, really, you know, a fundamental way. And you know, I hope more people are experience this. Music is so powerful, you know, and that's why bringing that together with wine, with two really physical and cerebral experiences. Yeah, it's
They really
powerful.
are. It says that the brain response is like an activation of the reward system. It's a frisson is like a, what did it say? The first thing it said, a sudden strong feeling of excitement or fear or a thrill in general is the feeling of frisson.
Interesting. It's funny. I turned to this page 25 and Susan's amazing work here, and I want to read just a quick a snippet. Ad hoc pairwise comparisons between wine ratings for sensory characteristics, matching, liking, arousal slash excitement, and dominance slash powerfulness between the different sound conditions were conducted via, doesn't matter. Of course, it matters, but we don't have to go that far into it. But people don't often think about these things: arousal and excitement, dominance and powerfulness. We use these as terms all the time in wine reviews, whiskey reviews, gin reviews. We tend to stick with what was it was I think it was Michael Jackson's Whiskey Bible, years ago, was called out for being a hypersexualized and sort of like ridiculous thing, because it was always, oh, it's like a woman with fine legs, or just something ridiculous like that, where we have these very feminine, very, but at the same time, very masculine things that we're saying about people. It's like we're putting arousal onto something else that has nothing to do in a review. Like, you, when you read it, oh, this whiskey has, I'm not gonna, I can't think of anything that douchey, but we hear it all the time. And I had this conversation with Nicole and with Violet this entire week. We've been opening all kinds of stuff: spirits, cider, sparkling wine, older wine. We have some 3 liters and some magnums of champagne. We have some 3 liters of older wines from the early 2000s, because we want to talk about how wine ages and all these other things. And I thoroughly enjoy having them, because, and you know this as well, there is a way we talk about wine in the industry, and in the room. The way we talk about wine on a podcast is different than how we would do it in a judging or in something else. And we're always pulling for that extra note, or that extra, buzzword, or that extra thing that someone else maybe didn't say, where I would say, oh, chili pepper, and someone would say, oh, well, it's Hatch chili from, the northwestern slopes of the New Mexico hills or something. And I'm like, or you could just say, sure, like you could also do
I
that. Or you know what
know
I
what you
mean? Like,
mean.
there's a way, there's a way to talk about things. But it is interesting how we talk about dominance and power and arousal and excitement when it comes to wine and music. So you did non vintage brut champagne.
Veuve Clicquot yellow
You're
label, very market consistent around the world. I made sure that I had a short list of different non-vintage champagnes that were really commercially viable because, you know, we want this to be a really relevant, you know, the paper to be relevant, you know, to the
Makes
market and to the
sense.
consumer. And that, you know, yellow label is one of the most widely distributed and the most consistent across all markets in terms of dosage levels and everything. Because actually, you know, you probably, I'm sure you know this, but like, you know, they're for different markets, they have different dosage levels for a lot of, you know, champagnes. And you know, because some people like a little bit drier, some people like a little bit more lush, you know, it just really depends. And so they will do that for different markets, but this is really quite consistent. And I made sure that all the bottles I got for all experiments were from the same lot so that there would be you know, no variation for that. And of course all the
Hyper
bottles were
consistent,
vented. And yeah, and I kept them all at the same temperature. I took temperature, like, you know, it open at the same time. I record all, you know, it's all this academic stuff, right? You know, but you just want to make sure that any differences that you see in the data are actually from the experience that the experimenters have and not from bottle variation or anything else. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It's pretty fun to be able to,
It's worth
to be
it
able to
though.
put all of your like thoughts into that and like create an experiment that worked and like you could put it down on paper. That's so fun to be able to do. Like, I love that.
Yeah, looking back at it, I'm like, gosh, how did I do that? You know,
Right?
because I just really want to do it, you know, is I really, when you really want to do something, you'll find a way. And I'm just really, really thrilled that it did happen. And you know what? I was super lucky because this was literally December 2019 when I had all, when I did, I hustled. I really hustled. I did all my proposal, my research paper proposal, to, and it was, I got the green light. And so I hustled to get all these experiments together, like all the venues, all the people. And it was so great because after shutdown happened, like I would have had to scrap the entire paper. There was no way because you had to do in-person experiments for this. There's no other way to do it. So thank goodness I hustled on it. And
Heck
all
yeah.
of, yeah, all the month of January was just data crunching, was just doing statistical analysis until I thought I was going to go crazy until shutdown actually happened. And then I thought, oh, I can go crazy being locked up in my house working on my paper. But you know what? That was actually worth it too. It was a perfect time to do it in retrospect. And also, thank goodness I have a piano because that saved my life too. Like, not just working on the paper.
My wife and I bought instruments during COVID, thinking we were going to learn them. They sat in their original packaging until a few weeks ago, when
You open it.
we gave them away.
Oh
This, I know, I apologize. That is heartbreaking, as I realize, but
It's okay.
we got incredibly busy. So my consulting and traveling dried up, as you know. I mean, we couldn't go anywhere. So the next thing I know, I'm sitting there reviewing hand sanitizer, instead of flying out to distilleries and helping people, you know, with their work. But it's interesting. So you did put a lot of effort into this research, and I don't want to say you have Brahms here, you have Debussy. What I'm not seeing is Metallica. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, that's another experiment. Again, you know, you kind of like each experiment, you have to have a really specific scope. And this was the springboard for like all my other research that I was doing. And so I'm hoping to do, I mean, you know, research always, your whatever data comes in, you always begets more questions, right? You have more and more questions that you have based on the research. Like there's so many things I want to do, and I've done on a smaller scale, maybe not with like, you know, the 70 plus participants type of thing. But since then I've worked with brands and companies and, you know, on premise, off premise, to do, you know, experiments, you know, based on, you know, kind of what they're looking for. And I've worked with pretty much every genre of music, from like trip hop to Kanye West to you know, city pop, everything else. Yeah, it's all good. I mean, because what's really interesting is that the research really kind of shows that even when there is a huge divergence of musical cultures, people tend to make the same associations intuitively between the different elements of the music. You know, Justin, you mentioned you were checking out the paper, and then you saw you were interested in the fact that there was these music can be broken down into different elements, right? Like pitch, how high or low is in general is the music? How fast is, like tempo? How fast or slow? What's the timbre? Is it like a really sharp sound, or is it kind of like a round, warm sound overall? What's the articulation? Is it really smooth, or is it like jumpy and percussive? Things
It
like
kind
that really can actually be used as levers, as this research shows, to be able to elicit different sensory characteristics in a wine.
makes me think of a, I think people have done this, like a similar experiment on music around plants and how plants grow depending on the music you play for them. It's very interesting.
I have a
I've had
confession to
that.
make that when I was a kid growing up, my parents had the worst plot of land. It was like seriously not arable. And it was a tiny little garden, and it was the worst plot of land ever. But I was hell-bent on growing tulips for whatever reason. And so I dug, like, you know, I was, you know, a little 5-year-old me was with a trowel, like trying to dig into this really hard, and then 7 inches down, I found concrete slab. But I planted those tulip bulbs anyway, and I played music for it like all the time. And you know what? Made me feel better that I played music. And they bloomed. They came up for years. So hey, I, you know, whether I had anything to do with it, whatever, but it's like, you know, people actually do play music for their vines and for their maturing barrels and for it in whiskey too. Like I'm trying to remember there was somebody who uses Metallica for their whiskey.
I was at a place in Sonoma several years back, and they had one barrel that was classical music, one barrel that was just Beatles, one barrel that was Michael Jackson, just iPods, you know, attached and, you know, plugged in, and a speaker next to the barrel, and just and they, you know, release those as single, you know, barrel releases, and you can tell a difference blind if you really, you know, if they don't say, hey, these are different barrels and they're different musics, and you tasted them blind, you could tell a difference. And then they would say, oh, this one was the Michael Jackson barrel, and you're like, oh, I understand now, this one was the whatever barrel, the classical music barrel. So I think what I'm going to start doing based off your paper is every time I get something very acidic, is I'm going to start calling it very Brahmian, you know, just say, oh, that's very Brahmian, very Brahms level of acidity. And no one's going to know what the fuck I'm talking about unless they read your paper. So that's going to be fun for me.
Well, you guys are going to sound really awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen how they take sand and they put it on the soundboards and then they play music and it turns into like the perfect sinistry of the designs? And then they compare those to like the human cells and snowflakes, and literally everything that is made has the same designs. And so it's like, it's totally energy.
It's amazing. It's like the golden mean.
Yeah.
And it comes out into the Fibonacci spiral.
I love it.
It's like, so it's like the earth and our bodies, like, all have some sort of homeostasis they want to go back to.
Yeah. It's like literally sort of, like, we're all made of the same things.
Yes.
It's a resonance, right? And so, you know, back to what you're saying with the barrels, you know, like Michael Jackson has wildly different types of music, just as classical has wildly different types of music. Some are soothing, some are, I mean, it's just like in heavy metal, there are these beautiful ballads, you know, and then there's just like the rage stuff. So it really depends on, like, you know, what you're playing. So what the kind of research that that I do is really about, it really actually transcends musical genre, because it's about what combinations of elements are in the music, right?
Absolutely.
And including the volume, including the character. So besides the elements like the pitch and the tempo and that sort of thing, you also have character, which is that, you know, the dominance, right? Or is it calm, or is it exciting, or is it powerful? Is it gentle?
How does it move you?
Even further.
It's like, it's striking how often we just use the same words to describe wine as we do music, like as we're all pointing out earlier. And that's really kind of one of the ways that I open up the conversation when I do events, bringing wine and music together for people, is, you know, have them just, you know, describe what's in their glass, and then, like, you know, I have them listen to some music and have them describe that. And so many times it's like, wow, you know, you're using some of these really similar words, and that's what we do. And so it really makes a lot of sense that, you know, this sort of intuitive association does happen. But at the same time, it's like, when you actually have to, when you want to look at whether there's actual, any sort of academic, like, you know, quantitative evidence coming up to this, that's the challenge. And that's why, you know, doing this research is it takes all that kind of background work, but is totally worth it. Because I think for me, it's always like a pursuit of a combination of data. Because after all, when you work with people, like, they want it, like, especially companies, if they want to invest in something, they want to kind of have an idea that there's a return on investment, there's some sort of trend. But also, I always want to make sure we never lose sight of the fact that there's always going to be that je ne sais quoi about how we feel about things, like why something just, it resonates with us with so much, like why, you know, Violet Nicole, a piece makes you just cry all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And, you know, those things that are super magical, because we are very sensory, holistic sensory beings. We're not thinking, like, as we taste wine, we're like, you know, oh, okay, yeah, this is exactly, you know, sometimes we are doing it, like, when we're judging or we're doing analysis, right? We start breaking down the constituents of the wine as we're tasting it. But in general, people don't do that, right? You know, if they're gonna in a tasting room or a restaurant, they're enjoying the conversation. They're hearing maybe some music that's being piped in. They might not even be aware of it. And they're enjoying the taste and the texture of the wine and the food. They're not thinking, oh yeah, you know, check out that Alberti bass on what's playing, you know, in the music, and like, you know, wow, this is really, mouth-filling tannins. You know, they're not thinking that, really. It's just about the general feeling, right? And all we're taking in at once. And that's why I think that bringing music and wine together bringing music and wine together in a concerted way, in a strategic way, can be extremely fun and powerful and a fun way to explore, you know, your own tastes and your own playlist and wine journey.
It's definitely therapeutic, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
And can be stimulating if you want to go that direction too.
I mean, I turn on different kind of music for different activities, you know, getting ready.
Different moods.
Certain things. And I love music.
Yeah. And I've been actually like working on a couple of different playlists for like different wine styles, like, mm-hmm. you know, a youthful, light, you know, fruity white wine to a richer, you know, has more like oak or oak influence or, you know, barrel ferment, you know, type of thing for a white, and then a lighter red to a richer red. And of course, different styles of sparkling.
Oh, yeah.
There's everything from like Orville Peck to, you know, to Tchaikovsky to, to like Ed Sheeran. So it's like, you know, whatever. It's, because they're all, again, it's, you know, regardless of the genre, like, you know, you can create certain moods and certain feelings, you know, through those combinations of musical elements and character. And that's the part that's really, really fascinating to me. And there's so much more to research. So everything that I do, I'm always sort of thinking about this. And people often ask me, they're like, well, because you did the paper, you did all this research and you're thinking about it all the time, like, do you not get affected by any of this? I'm like, of course I get affected by this. I'm a human.
I am doing it.
Like, I'm a human. I know what this is, and I'm totally susceptible to it. You know,
because
I'm just like everybody else.
That's why you got into it, because you're like, I want to know why I feel this way. You know, I'd like to know more. And that's what I would do. Even that Frisian stuff, like, I looked really deep into it after that, because I'm like, yeah, I want to know why I feel like, obviously, music causes emotion, but this is like, it's like over sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's cool though.
It's great to break it down.
I think it's time for the rapid fire round. I will start. I'm going to say the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds, one of the best Beach Boys albums. Mm-hmm. It does have some interesting variety. Tons of different instruments. Like, I think Brian Wilson even used like colanders at one point, just like he brought in all kinds of random stuff, goats, whatever. I'm gonna say that is going to pair incredibly well. Put the album on. We're gonna skip the cigar this time, and I'm gonna say I'm gonna have that with either a Veuve Carré or a Brunello di Montalcino 2016.
Wow. I like how you have two contrasting yet very, rich.
A bowl of peanut M&M's.
There you go.
100%. 100%. To balance it all out, because it will. Really will. So, Nicole, you're up.
I used to be Mormon, so I grew up not ever tasting any kind of wine or alcohol or anything. So this is all new to me. So it's interesting to learn. I have no idea what I would pair anything with.
Talk to us about Diet Pepsi. So if you really wanted to sit down, and it doesn't have to be booze. If you really wanted to sit down, you're like, okay, I'm done. I want to take 2 hours and listen to an album. Pick an album. What are you pairing with Diet Pepsi? And what candy are you going to have?
My music that I pair with is driving in my car. I drive in my car, like, I'll just get in my car, roll the windows down, turn my music up, and that's how I get my emotional
music
therapy. Yeah, with a Diet Pepsi in the cup holder, always.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah, I mean, I think driving is one of the best times where you can really
That's my time where everything is turned off. I don't have to answer my phone. I just look at the road and I go.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you like? What album are you listening to?
Oh, West Coast all the way.
Who?
West Coast.
Oh, okay. I don't know what she's saying. She's saying words. They mocked me earlier because I could not name an artist post like 2000. So they were kind of mocking me a little bit.
It's not a problem though. I mean, love what you love.
Yeah, like I want to get into modern music, but I just can't.
I don't stick with anything very long. I find something I love, I listen to it until it burns out, and then I go on to the next.
Oh,
I
I
love
see.
doing
Interesting.
that. Yeah, that's my
I did that with Meredith Brooks, I'm a Bitch. That was a great,
it
like, that was my jam. That
was.
whole album, honestly, there's some really great stuff on there. And I think I still have the CD somewhere. My wife looks at me, she's like, "Was this an ex-girlfriend's?" I was like, "Fuck, no, that was mine." Like, that was some emotional, powerful shit. You
Yeah.
know?
Some music that I always go back to is like Frank Sinatra, anything, that era. So I think that anything that I think Frank Sinatra paired with like, oh, that drink I made last night was pretty tasty. The of course I can't remember. I took a picture of it to see what we had in there.
Yeah, we got to know what this drink is.
Yes.
Taking two people who've never made a cocktail in their lives.
We did
So that's, ooh, that's
some
the,
savory gin, the
Amaro.
Amaro, and a triple jam cider.
Wow,
Yeah. So I think that
interesting.
would taste pretty, with a little lime on the edge. I think that would taste pretty good
That's pretty
paired
funny.
with some Frank Zappa,
Oh.
or not Frank, Frank Sinatra. I like both of them.
Frank
Oh,
Zappa, a
boy,
little different.
oh yeah.
you can
Yeah,
see him and Peter Law.
and Sinatra, much different guys. Love them both, though.
I know, that's great. I love Ella Fitzgerald,
Oh,
Frank Sinatra,
yes.
like all that, like Bobby
Yep.
Darin, all those, like I just grew up loving the Nat King Cole, all the things, like those are all things I
Yes.
wanted to sing. And you know what? The vocal range is actually more suited to my vocal range, so
That's
it's
that me too.
perfect.
I do karaoke often, and I tend to lean towards that era way more than anything. That and like, or Sabrina Carpenter, just the most pop that we can
Oh,
get
there you
to.
go.
So, and for hers, I would definitely do just a beautiful champagne. I think it'd be fun to pop a bottle and listen to some Sabrina.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Champagne. Interesting.
She's a classy lady.
Interesting. Have you heard of one of those Pink Rhino Club?
No, that's Chapel Run.
Okay, never
That's
mind.
Pink Pony Club.
Pink
Sure.
Pony.
Rhino, Pink Rhino.
And
Pink
Red
Rhinos, I feel
Line.
like that's something
She
else.
also she has a song called Red Line Supernova.
I feel like that's just ripping off
It
Oasis.
is, but it isn't. Doesn't sound anything like it, but it is the same name. That's what I was thinking of.
Interesting.
Champagne soup.
What's funny about the about what you said about Frank Sinatra is I can actually picture like him and Peter Lawford and Sammy Davis sitting in a lounge, smoke-filled, dark, dank. It's cool, the club's closed, and they're just sitting there having their late dinner because everybody's been kicked out. And fucking Joy Bishop walks in to join them, and they're having that cocktail that you made. That's the emotional resonance, the sort of that powerful connection that we can make. We can visualize that with just some soft,
Yeah, you can
music
hear them
playing in
like
the
sitting
background.
at like a nice little like jazz
Yeah.
lounge, cute, just sipping on a nice little
All
cocktail. Yeah,
right.
do you think this would go? I don't know if this is gonna. I don't know if you'll be able to. The sound is
Let's
gonna
see.
work.
I'm
I
excited.
excited. What happens?
mean, you want the lounge.
Beautiful. We can't hear.
We're getting nothing,
We
by
can't hear.
the
Yeah.
How's
We
that?
got
Here's with your
I got
cocktail. I
nothing.
got a dung, but I can tell
Yeah.
it looks like it
It
sounds
looked
beautiful.
like it sounded great.
Yeah.
We
You can't hear
got
it?
nothing. No, not
No.
at all.
Okay. All right.
That's
That's okay.
okay,
We
listeners. We
believe
couldn't hear it either. But it's fine. It looked like it sounded
you.
amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, actually last time I put the mic down on the bench and they said it was like almost too much. So
Right, right.
do it. Try it. See
Let's
what
try it.
happens.
Try
Yeah,
it.
let's do it. Thank you.
amazing etude by Frédéric Chopin that I would want to enjoy with a Philippinat Clos de Gloss 2015. Actually, any Philippinat Clos de Gloss would be amazing. So I'm not complaining, but this piece is so beautiful. It's so ethereal, and it's also powerful. Like it has like this filigree top note work, and it's so lush, and yet it's light. You know, when you have a really, really fine vintage champagne, you want something that has the sense of effervescence, and it's moving, and it's got energy, but it's elegant, and there's a richness, and there's like a textural component to it. And that's what I love about that. And, you know, when I'm thinking about, like, you know, recently I had a Seven Stills whiskey from San Francisco, right? I'm sure you're very familiar with that. Yeah. And it almost had like this chocolatey vanilla like character to it, which was amazing. And I definitely have a piece that I'm thinking about for that.
It is so crazy just hearing you talk about those drinks. It also, if you don't think about it being a drink, it sounds like you're talking about the music too. It is so fun. Yeah, like,
oh, I know.
Like really gathering it all, because like you said, we're so new to drinking and everything that we are learning all of these words and that they do mix together. So yeah, you're talking. I was like, wait, is she talking about the music right now? And I'm like, no, wait, it's the drink, but it's so interchangeable.
Yeah.
We're gonna pop up with some Domaine Glavier a little later and a few other champagnes. We've got a lot of holiday content to get through. So I'm looking forward to learning more. I'll finish the paper and then let's have you on again in 26, and we'll talk a little bit more in depth on some other things. Let's geek out on some stuff.
Absolutely. Would love that. Sorry, I thought I had this on Do Not Disturb. It's such a pleasure to, oops, am I here? Sorry.
Yep, we got you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's such a pleasure to speak with you about this, and I really appreciate your interest in this topic, because there's absolutely so much more to say about it, especially if you wanted to get into some really, really interesting cocktails and drinks, because even though I'm a master of wine and I specialize in wine, like I love spirits, I love cocktails, and experiment making different drinks, especially during the pandemic. I can't tell you how many different types of cocktails that I made. It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
Well, when we hit end recording, I will walk the laptop around and I will show you what the content house looks like.
Sure.
As far as our cocktail collection and our ability to make 107,000 cocktails a day.
Amazing.
In the meantime, thank you so much for coming on. As always, our special guest, Susan Lynn. Nicole, would you like to bring us home? She says no. Straight up, just shook her head no.
It's like being asked to say the closing prayer at church. I hate it.
All right. Well, Espiritu Santi, amen. Thank you, everyone. That's not the Mormon way to do it.
No, it's not. But,
I don't know.
I like it, though. That's sort of the old school way of doing it.
Mormony things. thank you, everyone, for joining us, all seven of you listening. Thanks for – we have five more. I added five more just because I can. I know, right? It's Susan. She drew the big crowds for us. So, yeah. crazy master of wine. You have a master of wine on your show, and suddenly you're in double digits. I mean, it's gonna be amazing. Well, to all of you out there, thank you very much for being the best part of Swig and Ramble, which is the community. So cheers and stay out of trouble. And if you can't,
for fun. Good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck. Yes. Yes. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.